We are Rogue Media Sports.
It's one thing falling in love with a house, picturing yourself moving in and calling it home, and quite another navigating the world of price negotiating, mortgage lenders, and finding the budget that works best for you. An agent who's a realtor can make understanding that world easier. Realtors have the expertise, access to proprietary data, and tools to help you get from imagining living somewhere to actually doing it. That's the kind of help we can provide. Because that's who we are. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
Norman, we need to pause this surgery.
What, doctor?
Because Xfinity Mobile just got even better. Now you're automatically connected to Wi-Fi speeds up to a gig while you're on the go. Plus, existing Xfinity customers can buy one unlimited line and get one free for a year.
Visit XfinityMobile.com to learn more. Offer ends 6/21. Restrictions apply. Existing Xfinity Internet service and two new unlimited lines required. Reduce speeds after 30 gigabytes of usage per line. Data thresholds may vary. Actual Wi-Fi speeds vary, not guaranteed.
It is the Doomsday Podcast, and it is another doomsday scenario with this Dallas Cowboys team. And there were no signs of the old Doomsday defense, as there was another bloodletting with giving up 294 rushing yards. We'll get more into that and some the weird scene there with Dez Bryant. We'll address that at the start of the podcast. But right now, quickly, Ed, joined by Ed Werder. The aftermath of this game, you and I just listened to Mike McCarthy, but can we at 3-9 with this beleaguered team and players in some ways being thrown under the bus and a pitiful showing altogether, especially by the defense, can we, especially on the aftermath, on the heels of great performances by the Giants and the Washington football team, can we finally put a nail in the coffin of the 2020 Dallas Cowboys?
Well, the Cowboys are officially a last place team in one of the worst divisions in NFL history. In their first season under Mike McCarthy, they officially have a losing record for the first time since 2015 and the third time since 2010. They have more losses by 17 or more points, four of those, than they have total wins, three of those. And to the point you were making, Mike McCarthy, after the game, described the performance as disappointing, noting they had a lot of extra time going into this game to prepare, felt it was a great opportunity, and they didn't take advantage of it. And then he said of their defensive issues, he said it's not because of scheme, which would seem to validate, exonerate defensive coordinator Mike Nolan. He said and that also seems to imply that he thinks the players are at fault. I just know this. The Cowboys defensive coaching staff and the players had 12 days to prepare for the Ravens and their one-dimensional offense. Now it is one of the elite and unique run offenses, and yet Lamar Jackson and the Ravens emasculate them with the aforementioned season-high 294 yards rushing. The only reason they didn't surpass 300 like the Browns is because their final scoring drive came near midfield following a failed onside kick, so they could only rack up half of the available yards. Orlando Brown, Ravens offensive lineman, heard shouting, "Easy money," as J.K. Dobbins gained the final yards and scored the last touchdown without breaking a single tackle and nary a sweat. Two of the three highest rushing totals by an opponent in the 60 years of Cowboys football have occurred during the course of just 13 games this season. I believe it's time with a snort. I think it's time to hit the music.
Hit the music. And there it is. In fact, Ed, you would be. You'd like to know that on my patio with the industrial-sized heater out there tonight, watching the ball game, our singer-songwriter, Ronnie Foss, attended this social distance watching party. We were all spread out. I had the heater working, the outdoor heater, and we had a nice evening watching the ball game, except it was a horrific performance by the Cowboys. I like that you brought up the easy money, Orlando Brown, saying that right into the camera. And I thought, Ed, we're going to get into this Dez thing. I think it's appropriate because I think it's it caused a as Dez always his sideline behavior over the years caused a lot of hand wringing, and his pregame activities brought on all kinds of talk. And we'll get into that. But Ed, real quick, how did you get to, you know, a lot of times you're at these games. This is a game you actually got to see on TV. Troy was all over the Cowboys. I thought Troy was, he pretty much basically called this a pathetic performance. And he particularly seemed to be just disgusted with some of the safety play. But we've had Troy on several times, thanks to you, on the Doomsday Podcast. I thought he was about as disgusted as he's been at any broadcast of the Cowboys. And that's saying something because he's shown disgust in the past.
Yeah. I think one of the things that makes him and his opinion so valuable is that even though he's a Hall of Fame quarterback who won 3 Super Bowls with this franchise, he's, you know, he's objective. I think he's fair. And the criticism he gave tonight, I thought throughout the game was fair. Xavier Woods, I think, is a guy he questioned a lot. I thought he generally questioned the intensity, the effort of the defensive players toward the end of the game. Something we've heard before. Darren Woodson did it on our show previously. And that was after the Cleveland game when they allowed 300 yards rushing. So that seems a common denominator. When a team comes near anywhere near 300 yards, it's fair to begin questioning their effort. But the interesting thing Troy said without being too specific was this is going to be an interesting offseason for this franchise because obviously they've got a lot of issues. I mean, I think the point he was making was, look, they lost their quarterback, their franchise quarterback, after 5 games, and they've lost a lot of the key members of their offensive line, all of them, in fact, by this point. But it's really not the offense that's the issue in a game like tonight. It was entirely on the defense and, I guess, to a degree, the special team, but Greg Zuerlein missing 3 field goal attempts at, you know, worth 9 points in a game that was a 10-point game for most of the way. I think it's going to be a fascinating offseason, and maybe it'll be a lot more riveting and deserving of our attention than anything we've seen to this point because, Dak Prescott's contract isn't done still. Mm-hmm. And I want to bring up, before we finish, Jimmy Johnson talking about what the Cowboys should do with Dak Prescott and a potential high draft pick at the end of the season. But I do think we should probably outline what happened with Dez Bryant. And
since I've lost Twitter, it's sort of your fault, but you didn't mean to do it. And I'm on a month now, and it literally is the worst.
You seem entirely too comfortable with it, by the way.
I'm not. I mean, I know I seem comfortable, and I know you went crazy and ESPN rushed to your aid. I don't really have anybody to rush to my aid. I have tried relentlessly. I've tried everything, and I would say they probably have the worst help desk or the worst IT probably anything I've ever dealt with in my life. And I've had people inside Twitter that work for Twitter. I won't name any names.
Not sure you're helping yourself right now, by the way.
Yeah, I know. We'll edit this out later. I really did need a vent. I don't think I'm ever going to get back on anyway, so it doesn't matter. But the reason I brought it up is I happen to see on like the Fox. No, I was watching basketball before the game. Okay. I'm watching college basketball because I'm way into college basketball on ESPN. And it comes over the crawl. Dez has tested positive. And I was kind of like, geez, I didn't know that. I didn't remember. This is like news to me. And then, of course, when I came back over to the game, at some point, I see footage of him running around the field before the game and like sitting there. And so the fact that I'm not on Twitter, then my buddies showed up and they said, yeah, he's been having a meltdown on Twitter. So it was the full Dez experience. So, Ed, if you would, since I sort of had to piece it all together via buddies and people that actually do have Twitter, walk me through exactly what happened. And what do you think this is going to – like, does a single hug of a Cowboys player count as contact tracing?
Okay, I will explain this all to the best of my ability. The NFL tested both teams, and one player declared ineligible as one to whom the game mattered the most. Dez Bryant denied his chance to play against a team that released him 3 years ago, and it was an unprecedented situation in the NFL during this pandemic and their efforts to play through it. Of course, COVID would touch one more time on this game because COVID's the reason it was played tonight, delayed from last week when it was supposed to be played because of the outbreak with the Ravens, who had, you know, over 20 players, almost two dozen players ineligible at one point or another because of COVID positive tests or close contacts, including Lamar Jackson, who had three touchdowns in the game tonight. So the NFL had said all along that it would pull a player off the field if a positive COVID test came back during the game. Now, that still hasn't happened, but Dez was pulled during pregame warm-up, so that's as close as we've come to a player being pulled after a game started. Unlike many teams, the Ravens are so close to the laboratory where they get their test results back, they came the same day rather than overnight. If they had been almost any place else, the Dez test wouldn't have come back until tomorrow after the game was played.
They got a good lab there. A good lab there.
But as it is, with an 8:05 Eastern time kickoff, they re-ran the test because the first one was inconclusive. The retest process played out while Dez was at the stadium and warming up. And then the test came back positive for COVID-19 tonight. And so he was told he couldn't play. All the other Ravens players tested negative and were deemed not to be high-risk close contacts. And so the rest of the team was able to play, but no Dez Bryant. The game was played, obviously, as scheduled. I think the other interesting thing here is the NFL did its usual contract tracing, including, you know, that tracking data and the interviews, and they determined nobody else was close contact, high risk. Now, you mentioned, how do they define close contact? And it's actually not just a casual encounter with somebody. It's one that lasts for a duration of time, generally 10 to 15 minutes, with an infected person.
Yeah, so, but, you know, honestly, and I'm not trying to go Dr. Fauci on you here, but if you're, like, hugging a guy, that's different than, like, I mean, what's weird about all this contact tracing is, like, so 15 minutes, like, in the same room, you're going to get into contact tracing. But if you go up and give a long hug and have maybe a 2 or 3 minute sort of fairly close deal, it's like, no, that's not – that doesn't apply. So some of this seems pretty...
I don't think we know everything. Let's see what the fallout is from this, because there are certainly people who question, well, does this mean the game's going to be played or it's going to be postponed again? But obviously, you know, this was, to me, the most dangerous opponent for this to happen, as I would, you know, assume that Dez would physically interact with a more Cowboys personnel before a game than any other team because of his friendships and, mm-hmm. you know, popularity from his long and successful career with the Cowboys. And I would be confident that he engaged and embraced many former players and coaches. But I am told that Jerry Jones, who's obviously at high risk because of his age and has taken, gone to great lengths to protect himself. I was told that they had no immediate concerns for themselves or others because Bryant had actually been pulled from the field before Jerry and Steven and the rest made their way onto the field. So Jerry and Steven never came into contact with Dez during this period of time.
All right. So Jerry is safe. Dez, we'll have to pull up some of those, Ed, if you don't mind. Check. He may have taken them down by the way my buddies.
Yeah.
He
was despondent. He said he was first. He said he was emotional and he was done with football for the rest of the year. He was quitting. He's just going to go home. And then he said he was going to just drink wine all night. And eventually, he suggested that he had a glass or two of wine, but was working diligently on some off the field project that he wanted to share information with. And apparently he thought people were more interested in that than they would be the game being played without him. I think ultimately he decided that was probably not the case. But he was not able to play, and it'll be interesting to see, you know, what happens with him this week, because obviously the Ravens have a lot of big games to play as they try to nail down one of these wild card playoff bursts in the AFC.
Wow, it was a remarkable scene, and in some ways, it did at times seem to overshadow what was actually happening on the field. Now, again, we'll have Glenn Stretch Smith will drop by for his grades shortly, but Ed, let's discuss a little bit of this ball game. Cowboys fall to 3-9. Ravens improved to 7-5, and they may have kind of gotten their mojo back. That was a gorgeous pass. Lamar didn't light it up through the air, but did throw a gorgeous pass over there to Hollywood Brown. But he gets the Cowboys early on and of course, Mike McCarthy, as we noted earlier, said, hey, if you don't know the scheme at this point of the year, basically put it on the players and said it's more of an execution point than a scheme. Well, I mean, Ed, I would say that on that first long Lamar Jackson touchdown run, they had, unfortunately for Leighton Vander Esch, they had plenty of replays of that. And he just, completely on the run fake, he just bailed out of the play altogether. And Lamar holds on to the ball on the read option and or on the, obviously RPO, and he goes racing up the middle. Ed, the Red Sea, there was no safety in, it's just like there was nobody. And this has happened far too often to this Cowboys team. And, oh, by the way, that was a fourth down play. So once they got past Vander Esch, everything
and the Cowboys
was
had
shot
the lead
the
at the time. The Cowboys had the early lead Correct. At the time. Off a turnover of all things that they partly cashed in on. But yeah, we know the Ravens are, a unique offense. Their offensive coordinator, devised a creative run-based offense around this unique quarterback that they drafted at the end of the first round. But it's not like they've never been stopped. If you look at their previous three games, they totaled 304 yards rushing. And then tonight they almost have that in four quarters against the Cowboys. Gus Edwards, Lamar Jackson, DK Robbins, they averaged almost 9 yards a carry, fourth highest rushing total in the history of the franchise. And, the Cowboys have allowed, listen to this. The Cowboys have allowed a league high 393 points. The three teams directly above them on that list have already either fired their head coaches or are expected to do so at the conclusion of the season. That's Detroit, which just fired its coach. They've allowed 358 points. The Cowboys have allowed 393, followed by the winless Jets, who have allowed 353 points. So the Jets haven't won a game, but they've allowed 40 fewer points than the Cowboys, and the one-win Jacksonville Jaguars at 352 points. So the Cowboys just have all kinds of defensive issues, and it is going to be interesting to see what they can do to be more competitive in, after an off season. But they've got the worst points differential, -125. That means they've allowed 125 more points than they've scored. That's the second worst number in the NFL behind the Jets, who are 173. Dallas hasn't finished with the worst points differential in the conference since 1989, when they went 1-15 in Jimmy Johnson's first year as an NFL head coach.
Yeah, it is. And I will remind you, at some point you had teased something you were going to talk about that Jimmy had talked about, I assume, on Fox. And so I want you to talk about that. Ed, given those numbers and given the Cleveland game, this game, the other games, Washington game, where they got shredded in the run game. Obviously the defense had some moments where it looked like they were trying to kind of hang in there for a couple of weeks. Now they're back to their old horrible ways. And Ed, this was a Ravens team, and obviously they were great last season. They've not been that great. They've been in a bad way lately. And in fact, they've lost like four of their past five games. So it's not like they came in as a particularly hot team into this game, and they just obliterated the Cowboys. Ed, it's hard for me to imagine Mike McCarthy, even with the COVID excuse, even with the offensive line excuse, maybe even if you give him that they lost Gerald McCoy or something. How in the world do you not have to fire some members of this defensive coaching staff? Or do you think Mike is basically, like he did tonight, going to firmly put this on the players?
I'm not sure, first of all, that Mike Nolan was the first choice of Mike McCarthy or Jerry Jones to be the defensive coordinator on this coaching staff. I think he was a compromise candidate. So I don't think that Mike McCarthy is ultimately going to be able to – I don't think he's going to have the leverage to justify keeping Mike Nolan on the coaching staff unless there's an abrupt turnaround in the final month of the season, which I just can't foresee. And it was interesting this morning on his radio show on the morning of the game, Jerry got into something you referenced a little earlier, which is, you know, if you look at the most recent games, you know, Washington with its third different starting quarterback and a first year coach in Ron Rivera went on the road and became the first team to beat the Steelers yesterday. The New York Giants with backup quarterback Colt McCoy under first time head coach Joe Judge traveled to Seattle without Saquon Barkley and Daniel Jones, and they defeat the Seahawks, a team the Cowboys lost to with Dak Prescott. And when Jerry Jones was asked about New York and Washington having more success with new coaches while also being without their starting quarterbacks, he said, quote, "I think that's a fair approach to look at it. I don't know how you could line them up and make a fairer comparison," which that suggests he believes the criticism of Mike McCarthy is fair under the circumstances, that he sees a great many similarities and parallels between these teams, and yet these other coaches, you know, similarly decimated at the most important spot in the league on the team have gone out and won and gotten themselves into contention. I mean, the Giants lead the division, and they started 0-5. They were 1-7.
Yeah.
And the Cowboys have done no such thing. They've totally caved. In fact, now, you know, with the Eagles making the switch from Carson Wentz to rookie Jalen Hurts today, every team in the division is starting a different quarterback than they had week one. And that hasn't happened since 2004. 11 different starting quarterbacks for the four NFC East teams once Jalen Hurts takes that first snap this week against the Saints. Pretty remarkable stuff.
Yeah. Well, the real thing with the Giants, they at least have a really good play caller, is the reason I think they've turned things around.
That redheaded guy that used to be the bane of so many Cowboys fans' existence the last 10 years here?
You know, I'm watching that thing the other day, and if he didn't just start pounding the football, like he changed it in the second half and he just started pounding the football, they win the game. Redskins get lucky and are able to kick a field goal at the end of the half. They're still down 14-3. Nobody thought they were going to come back and do anything against the undefeated Steelers. And they find a way. They start ground and pound. And that Alex Smith, who rarely throws a ball more than 10 yards down the field, but he's leading the way. And so I think that is interesting. And Ed, if we really want to talk about it, some of these coaching hires, whether it be Joe Judge, even let's not, you know, Matt Rhule doesn't have a ton better record, but I would say right now, Panthers fans, because of being in all these games and the culture change that's going on there, and they've done a lot of this without McCaffrey and other people, they feel so great. I mean, they feel a lot better about their future. I would say that of the hires this year, based on our evidence, just on the evidence, again, I'm holding him to a COVID 3-9 since he's been with the Cowboys. He's been about the worst hire out there.
He's got the worst record. Only among the new five new coaches in the NFL, only Kevin Stefanski at Cleveland has a winning record. Oh, and his team had a 300-yard rushing game against the Cowboys too.
And they're 9-3.
Let's not neglect them. They're having the best year in Cleveland in 20 years. So I would say by far that was the best hire based on first year record. McCarthy's record is the worst of any of the five coaches. And I don't think anybody expected that to happen with the roster that he inherited here, with the expectations being what they were, his history being as it were, you know, having led Green Bay to not the playoffs 9 straight years and 13 years in Green Bay, winning a Super Bowl. Now again, there have been a lot of injuries, but I just don't think that excuses the way this team has performed on either side of the ball. They weren't winning when they had Dak Prescott either. They were 2-3 when he was a starting quarterback, and really they should have been 0-5. You know, they won the two games they won under Dak, they won on final last second field goals under fluke circumstances against both the Giants and the Falcons.
Yeah.
Games they really should have lost. So they've been bad all year long.
And tonight, speaking of coaching, and you know, Fossil maybe deserves some of this too, for the special teams coordinator for the Cowboys. But you, at one point, I mean, everybody watching that game could see that the snapper and the kicker were just the play clock was going down and nobody was doing anything. It was almost like they wanted a 40-yard field goal instead of a 35-yard field goal. And like, literally, I'm just thinking, okay, like, why are they standing around? And you didn't hear the refs do anything, and they just did a delay of game penalty. And then after the game, McCarthy's asked, like, well, Mike, did you think about why didn't anybody call a timeout there? And he said, well, I thought they were going to kick the field goal. Like he said, I thought my guys were going to kick the field goal.
He didn't want to freeze his kicker like Jason Garrett did so infamously early in his head coaching career for the Cowboys.
Well, he wouldn't have frozen them because they were showing no indication they wanted to kick that field goal. They were just standing there. So it was that was another strange thing. Ed, other side of the ball. I mean, I don't know. We'll talk to Stretch in a minute. I thought in listening to McCarthy, he felt somewhat pleased about how they played. There was the interception. I mean, if you think about it, they had a short field on the one field goal because that was the Cowboys had the interception on that one. And then the other one, did they score a touchdown off the long? They did, didn't they? The long kickoff return, the 70-yard return by Pollard.
Tony Pollard's 66-yard return, yeah.
So
they scored a touchdown off another short field. And then they had the one at the end of the game to Amari Cooper on fourth down. They almost got stoned on the goal line. They failed on three plays from the one to run it in. And then on fourth down, Andy Dalton threw the touchdown pass to Amari Cooper, who made a nice catch. But I think as a head coach, a very successful head coach, I believe it was Bill Belichick, famously said once after a horrific loss, on to Cincinnati. And that's what the Cowboys are. They're on to Cincinnati. Andy Dalton can be the big story all week long going to play against the team that he began his career. It's not, let's hope he gets a little further into the game than Dez Bryant did playing in his revenge game.
Oh man.
And then I don't know when you want me to do this, but at some point I want to share what Jimmy Johnson said on the Fox pregame show and whether we think what he's suggesting is feasible for the Cowboys as it relates to Dak and having a very high draft pick.
Well, I mean, I think Stretch is calling in any minute, but while we're waiting on him, why don't you go ahead and do that?
I didn't know we were doing this in real time. And depending on Stretch, I would never set myself up for that. Okay, yeah. So Jimmy Johnson on the pregame show, and for a little context, obviously this is advice from a former Cowboys Hall of Fame head coach who used the first two first-round picks the franchise had after hiring him in 1989, used both of those picks in the space of a couple of months, a single offseason. He drafted Troy Aikman first overall in the regular draft, and then a month and a half or 2 months later in the supplemental draft, he drafted Steve Walsh, giving up the Cowboys' first-round pick the following year for that, which would have been the number one overall pick again. They were 1-15 that year. So Jimmy Johnson last night, with that as the background, on Fox says the Cowboys' number one priority has to be getting a long-term deal with Dak Prescott. And then said, quote, having said that, I don't expect them to have this high of a pick in the draft in the future. So I would not bypass a franchise quarterback in the draft. So Jimmy Johnson is suggesting the Cowboys follow his own blueprint in 1989 and secure the quarterback that they have, Dak Prescott, with a huge investment. Obviously, I just don't see how this is feasible. When Jimmy did this, there was no salary cap. When Jimmy and Jerry put Aikman and Walsh in the same locker room using first round picks, there was no salary cap in play. This seems like an impossible strategy now because Dak's going to get a huge multi-year deal, or he's going to count $37 million on the franchise tag on a cap that's going to be reduced from what it is right now. So I don't think you could have two quarterbacks counting that much against a salary cap, as good of an idea as it might be to have both and trade one. I don't think that's a practical solution for the Cowboys.
I like what it, do you Joe. Think? I like the I love the old style thinking. It doesn't sound practical to me at all, but I do think if the Cowboys were in position to get Trevor, if they could lose that effectively, then I think we could have a great, great conversation. But that's not the case, and I'm just trying to think the next quarterback. But hey, Ed, we'll talk about this later. We have Justin Fields. That's right. Would you take Justin Fields while you were still trying to negotiate with Dak? I don't think Jerry would. I think Jerry would feel too weird about all of that. Jimmy was more of a cutthroat type guy. I know they were together, but we all know Jimmy had a lot more say back then. All right. All this to say, Stretch has been with us. I'm sorry. Stretch has already, he's been hanging with us. And Ed, you know, I like to treat this like live radio. I didn't realize we had Stretch ready to go. Let me call him up here. I want to be able to see him. Oh, there he is. Now I can see him. I'm sorry, Stretch. I now I can see you sitting there in your home office. And Chris Gross, I can see him too. Stretch, Cowboys find another way to lose. It's not shocking that they lost this game. But, Stretch, let's start with the defense. That was a pitiful display. Your good friend and longtime compadre, Troy Aikman, was very disgusted. And before we break it all down, you know, he really did not like the way Xavier Woods was playing. I thought this team missed Donovan Wilson, one of the few playmakers on this defense. But was that Stretch? There have been some pretty poor defensive performances this season. Is this about as ugly as you've seen?
I've never seen anything like this. I'm an Air Force kid. I've lived around the world. I lived in Okinawa. I've seen people do things that are some of the strangest things I ain't ever seen anything like this. Ever in my life have I ever seen anything that I felt like this scheme and what they're doing, it's more effed up than a goose in a hailstorm. I ain't never seen anything like it. I'm just telling you, I've never seen anything like it.
You'll be glad to know that Mike McCarthy said after the game, it's not the scheme.
Yeah, well, hey, that's why I'm on here talking to you guys instead of having a job in the NFL. Because I've just never seen anything like it. And if he doesn't think it's a scheme, maybe he needs to get out of the offensive meeting room and go spend some time across the hall.
Yeah, that may not be the worst idea in the world. Help us out a little, Stretch. When you see that scheme and you're sort of trying to figure out what they're trying to accomplish. And to further Ed's point, McCarthy said after the game, guys, we're too far down the road for this to be the scheme. This is about the execution. What is it about what they're trying to do that is just creating so many enormous gaps and allowing these huge runs, i.e. on a fourth and short, Lamar to be able to take it to the house from midfield?
I mean, you got 12 days to practice for this guy running around. That's really what he does. You get in a fourth and two situation, you play cover zero, line up in a 46 bare front, and let him walk into the end zone, and you tell me it isn't a scheme? I mean, I don't understand that, and I get it. Van Der Esch may have gone in the wrong gap. You know, we could sit here and cut that down, but the bottom cover, they're playing cover zero against a guy that's a running quarterback. It's just more than I can. I mean, it's more than I can stomach. I mean, and it's not just me, because I start calling friends of mine who have coached in the NFL, retired guys, you know, and they, I mean, it's the same feeling. So at some point you start thinking, you know, is it me? Am I being too hard on this guy? Am I expecting something here that maybe I'm not seeing? Are you seeing the same thing I'm seeing? And I mean, to a man, you know, the guys are saying that they don't get it. So, and I guess that's why all of us aren't in the league right now, because I certainly have never seen anything. And I know we've said this since about week three of the season, where they don't set the edge. They don't play with leverage. They don't get in gaps. They turn guys buck free in the secondary. I'm telling you guys, it's the drizzling shits. And I'm sorry to use those kind of words.
So to your point, the cover zero, that's the coverage that got Greg Williams fired. Was it more ludicrous for Greg Williams to play it in the circumstance that he did in the final 5 seconds of the game against the Raiders? Or was it more ridiculous for them to play it tonight against a running quarterback like Lamar Jackson, who had the longest run by a quarterback for a touchdown against Dallas in 6 decades of football?
Well, and I mean, I guess after the fact, I'm assuming that they're going to come and say, hey, we're going to take our chances and play cover zero against maybe an inaccurate quarterback, somebody that they didn't feel like was accurate. And then I watched him move out to his left tonight and throw the touchdown pass. So to answer your question, I'm guessing that they were gambling up there thinking they could stop him from running the ball. But when you have, again, 12 days to practice and you make that many, if he says it's scheme, then that means you're making that many mental busts. And then I'll ask you this. I'd have put it right back on it. At week 12 of the season, when you go in and you grade the film and you sit and you grade how many mental busts there are they? Who do you put that on? Is that on the players? Is that on the coaches? I mean, it sounds to me like he's kind of saying, hey, it's the players. And I get it. I mean, Xavier Woods turned it down. I've never seen anything like that. I mean, he wouldn't go up and even try to make a play on Lamar Jackson. Then he goes up and throws his body against a 315-pound fullback. At some point, I don't know. I'd start questioning how smart he is. I didn't see him wrong arm a powder one time. I'm talking about just flat throw up your skirt. I just haven't seen anything like it, guys. So, I mean, we could go on and on about this defense. But the bottom line is, let me say it again and let me get it out of my – the drizzling shits. That's what they want.
Oh, my goodness.
One comment that got my attention, I don't know if you saw this, Matt, but DeMarcus Lawrence said the Cowboys' pass rush should have done a better job slowing their rush and preventing Lamar Jackson from leaving the pocket. Might that thought have occurred to the Cowboys at some point during the 12 days they had to plan for this game?
You would, Ed, you would certainly think so. They supposedly the day that, you know, when was it that they played Pittsburgh? Was it last week that they, you know, they were able to sit around and, you know, have nachos and drink Pepsi and watch the game together and ha ha and hee hee in a meeting? I'm assuming maybe they may have thrown a real novel idea like that out there during that meeting, but it doesn't look like it was very productive, guys.
No, and you know, at some point, we were discussing this stretch before you came on. It almost seemed like, you know, the Orlando Brown, the big tackle, said into the camera, "Easy money." It Lamar Jackson was just toying with them. I would say Kyler Murray, it was somewhat similar. I'm trying to remember. He didn't have a great game against them, but he still ran around and did what he does. But to your point, yeah, they didn't. That's interesting that Lawrence said that, because what they did, Ed, if you watch that game at stretch, they came racing past him, even the big number 78. Well, even when he would break in there and get, you knew he wasn't going to catch him, and they weren't really spying him. They weren't keeping anybody. So bottom line is, anytime, you know, what Lamar is what Michael Vick was in Atlanta in his early years. He is, he at times, for a defense like this, he's just impossible to stop, especially when you're just like, there's just, and I think, Stretch, correct me if I'm wrong, what you'd hope Vander Esch was would be the kind of guy that what you used to think of Sean Lee, the sideline to sideline kind of guy that might give you a chance against some extremely athletic quarterback like this, and yet it didn't. In fact, Vander Esch was more negative than anything he did positive tonight.
Well, I thought the one play that they did have it, it looked like they had it schemed right. Jalen Smith comes on the outside. They run the zone fake inside, and he just outruns Jalen to the boundary and for a first down. So, you know, you can say, hey, he misjudged his speed or didn't understand, you know, how quick he was around the edge, wasn't able to do that during practice. I mean, I would have let CeeDee Lamb be the damn scout team quarterback so I could have gotten a speed look in that situation. But guys, the bottom line is when you average right at 8 yards a snap running the football, at some point to walk to the podium and tell me it isn't scheme, please don't insult my intelligence.
According to the Elias Sports Bureau, the Cowboys have never even allowed 3 total 30-yard rushes in a game over the last 40 seasons, which is as far back as their research on that subject can go. So they think this is an entirely unprecedented situation for the Cowboys defense. And you guys are right. I mean, Lamar Jackson's a unique player, that's why he was the league MVP last year. But he's not unbeatable, and he hasn't certainly been anything close this season to the player he was a year ago. His yardage was like cut in half from a year ago. They went into this game coming off 3 straight losses. So they weren't the team, and he hasn't been the player to this point that they were and he was in 2019. Now, maybe they got it all right. I do think they have a tremendous coaching staff and their football operations people, their scouting staff. I think they're great at player development. I mean, they do it all right in Baltimore, but there are ways to beat this team. And there are ways to be more competitive than the Cowboys were, although I think it was a 10-point game most of the way because the offense didn't just turn the ball over and get them killed like they've typically done.
Well, and you make a good point, Ed. I mean, I thought offensively, I mean, I thought they played really well. I mean, for an offensive line to give up 1 sack that's, you know, a makeshift, basically second offensive line, I thought they did some really good things offensively. I think this team is really good offensively. I think they've got depth. I think getting these guys the opportunity to get in the game and let them play some and let them, you know, let them get in. And you're going to have depth for a while from an offensive line perspective to see Noah Brown go out there and do what he does, you know, do what he did. They've got a really good core of receivers. I think, you know, you see Zeke tonight bow his neck and, you know, hit it in there. I mean, that tells me that, you know, he's still got a lot in the tank. I saw Dalton Schultz do some good things. I saw Andy Dalton really, I think, played really well in the football game. So for his, you know, for what the offense did, they gave you every opportunity. I mean, the call before the non-call right there before the half absolutely killed the momentum. Field goal kicker missing 3 kicks really hurt you. But guys, offensively, I thought this was about as good as you could expect the Cowboys to play in this situation. I still can't get over, you know, how bad defensively they are. It's absolutely mind blowing. And I was so frustrated. You know, I found myself picking up the phone and calling Ed and saying, get that guy a damn Uber and get him out of here at halftime. Freaking bad.
If we're going to talk about the phone calls that I've gotten from you about firing Mike Nolan, let's set the record straight and say that they began in week 3 when I was in Seattle. So that's when you first recognized that Mike McCarthy might have a problem on the defensive side of the ball.
Is that an abacus right over your right shoulder where you just push a little bead across every time Stretch calls you and says, hey, let's get rid of that guy, for crying out loud? And you turn around and say, that's the 12th damn call I've received from that guy.
I'm just trying to say, hey, you were onto that part of it very early on. Your recognition and perception on that point occurred very early in the season.
What did you?
I'm just not sure how to. I don't know how to move forward with that whole situation, and the fact that McCarthy comes out and says it's not scheme. It makes me question a lot about, quite frankly, the head coach of this team right now.
Yeah, it's pretty pitiful. I wanted, I'd hate to rob you of the chance to talk about special teams. They had the great kickoff return. Pollard did bucket up in there for about 70 yards, put them in position to score, and they cashed in. So that was the good. The bad was a 35-yard field goal, and nobody thought to ever call a timeout, and they just kind of stood out there and let the play clock go down. It seems like there's at least about one of those, like, sort of just mind-numbing sort of special teams things every week. Stretch, is that just a what do you say when you see something like that? Is that another coaching problem?
Well, I mean, I do. I go to the head coach, and I'm like, why would you not have called a timeout in that situation? I do not understand why they would have let the play clock expire there, and it obviously threw the timing off. You could tell, the deep snapper's frustrated. You could tell Zerline's frustrated. It threw the whole timing of what you wanted to do right there off. So, guys, I don't understand that. And I mean, I certainly, it's hard to blame Fossil because they were out there ready to kick it. I don't know why they didn't snap it and get it off. I'm not sure. But with the head coach being right there and not choosing to take a timeout in that situation leads me to come back to saying, you know, is Mike McCarthy really, is he really able to be the head coach that supposedly he went in and sold Jerry on being? I mean, I'm the guy that's been out here in the barn, and we've been grinding it and watching every play and plugging in analytics to every situation. And I feel like I've got a much better grasp on what's going on. And then he comes in here and does the job he's done, guys. I get it. You've been, you know, they're banged up and they're beat up, but so minty when it's just uncountable mental errors. I don't know how you go into a staff meeting and you're able to even explain that to the head coach. Part of it says, you know, from a defensive back standpoint, I mean, are they still turning guys scot-free in the secondary? Is it secondary coaches? Is it the lack of experience from these guys? I mean, all those questions the head coach has to answer, but to come up and say it isn't the scheme and you got number three running scot-free on a deep two, what do you mean it isn't the scheme?
Yeah, it's very curious, and Stretch, I appreciate it. Great stuff from you. I'm sorry I was running a little bit late tonight. And what I'm going to do, Stretch, because of your patience with me over the years, I'm going to be sending you a case of Miller Lite right out there to the house.
Whoa!
Yes. Yes. And Stretch, you know that's the original light beer. Miller Lite always been there to bring people together through Miller time. Let me give you a personal experience of mine. Tonight, obviously I'm still recovering, still have pain meds coursing through my veins, so I am not partaking in any of that type of thing, but all the buddies on the back patio were having Miller Lights, and they were having a great time with it. So cheers to the only beer of the Cowboys celebrating 60 years of greatness. Here's to the original light beer. It's Miller time, and here's the deal. Holiday season, Miller Lite will celebrate a unique occasion with the Dallas Cowboys as title sponsor of the iconic Thanksgiving Day game. Miller Lite and Cowboys produced holiday knitwear, sweaters, hats, and socks. Stretch, you'd love some of that knitwear, with proceeds to be donated to the Salvation Army. You know, you hear the bells, and you've dropped some coins or hopefully bigger bills in there, celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 96 calories and 3.2 carbs per 12 ounces. Stretch, thank you.
Hey, I tell you, Mosley, and I know you feel like you're the radio savant, but during your sabbatical that you went on, I'll go ahead and let you know, Ed did a lot better job on that read. So, hey, didn't mean to bother you tonight, Mosley. Get me one of those sweaters in a 3XL. See you.
Good night. Good night.
See you, Stretch.
There he goes. off into the holiday season. That is the volatile Glenn Stretch Smith. Ed, how do you feel right now? Do you feel like we should have Chris Gross at least delete one of those? He said he dropped a couple of S-bombs. I mean, do we need to leave those? I mean, you and I perform for families, and we don't we usually refrain from any kind of profanity, but that was he got pretty aggressive there this evening.
I'm going to defer to you. I feel like you're more responsible for the content on this program beyond what I hold myself accountable for is my own personal point of view and the things I say. I can't be liable for what you allow Stretch to say, so I'm going to defer to your judgment on that.
All right. Well, I will say our producer with Frito Nation Productions, Chris Gross, married to a staff member at a very prominent Baptist church. So I would say he may be a little offended about some of that coarse language that Stretch was using.
I think it might even be more effective to bleep it.
Yeah, like it, I don't know.
Might create some curiosity as to what exactly he said.
I'm sure Frito couldn't have done that. Maybe Chris can.
I guess we'll find out tomorrow.
Frito, not too far from being sent home. I don't know if he's being – I think at some point they just kick you out. But I do think, according to Facebook, and I know you talked with him, Ed, that Frito is on the verge of being sent home. And won't that be a happy day if he's allowed to somehow be on his own? I would say, given where he's been, that would be a remarkable turn of events.
Yeah, I was in my hotel room in Arizona, Glendale, covering. It was the night before the game I just covered, the Cardinals and the Rams, and my phone rang. Kind of late at night, and I looked over and it said Mark Frito Friedman. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is either really good news or something horrible has happened again. And fortunately, it was Frito calling just to have a chat, my first with him since he fell ill and his life was in some jeopardy. And he sounded great, full of optimism. Obviously, he's done an awful lot of hard work in this physical therapy. You know, learning how to walk again and being able to function on his own. And, his goal, I know, is to walk out to that truck in the parking lot and drive home before Christmas and be able to take care of himself and his house. And, I think he's capable of that from what I gather.
Well, I sure hope so. And, I'm glad y'all got to catch up there in your hotel room, but enough about the pillow talk you guys had. Ed, let's say goodnight in only the way we can. Ed, you've already told your Jimmy. You talked about Jimmy. You were covering the Cowboys back in those days or right around then.
That's my first year.
Your first year on the beat. Ed, let's play this thing out. Cowboys now, as you said, on to Cincinnati. They got to prepare. They got to fly out. Did you hear that question tonight, Ed? It's like, boy, you guys have to be on a plane by Saturday. Oh, my gosh. How will they ever do it? And I do think the NFL, by the way, deserves some criticism. It's like they'll wait like a week and a half or whatever it takes to let the Ravens play. But, I mean, with Denver, I guess what they deemed because of Denver's poor behavior. But, by the way, the Ravens – the president of the Ravens put out an email basically, you know, accepting responsibility for having some breakdowns that led to some of the issues. So they had four strains and then three not so severe, then one very severe strain. but he took responsibility. But it seems like there's some teams the NFL will bend over backwards to let them try to get enough players out there to play. But when it came to the Denver Broncos, it's just like, to heck with you. Oh, you don't have the quarterbacks? Get out there and play. Find right. somebody that can play. That's a pitiful product that they put out there.
Explain this
game.
To you? You want me to explain yeah, fine. The difference to that, you?
Okay. Yeah, sure.
The difference is the Ravens had a massive uncontained outbreak in which nearly two dozen players tested positive, and they had players test positive for 9 consecutive days. So they couldn't possibly know by the time they had to decide on their game against Pittsburgh on Thanksgiving night and then moving it several times thereafter. They weren't going to play it until they had a sense that they knew that the end of the positive tests had come, that they were at the end of that episode. And as soon as they felt that way, they scheduled the game and forced the teams to play. And the Ravens played in a far more compromised state than the Broncos. The Ravens played without their starting quarterback, their two of their three best receivers, all of their running backs.
No,
hold
no.
on,
they,
hold on.
They were not more compromised than the Broncos, who did not have a single quarterback. They had two quarterbacks. They had RG3 and Trace McSorley. Broncos were far more compromised.
The only thing the Broncos didn't have was a quarterback, and that was their own fault. The difference is this. It's about containing it and not containing it. In Denver, their feeling was it was limited to the four quarterbacks who showed up on their off day on Tuesday and violated the protocols and made themselves vulnerable as a close contact to a player who had tested positive, one of the other quarterbacks. So for that reason, they decided, okay, it's contained to these four players. They're playing the game. We've said all along that we're going to make these decisions based entirely on medical information, not on fair competition. The teams are responsible for making sure they have expanded rosters, they have extra practice squad, they have, you know, 3-week IR, they have plenty of resources. They could have quarantined a quarterback like Buffalo's done all year with Jake Fromm had they chosen to do so. They chose not to abide by the protocols, and they didn't protect themselves for that eventuality. So that's why the Broncos were made to play, and the Ravens were – their game was put off until they were sure that they had a sense that it was contained, and then they were made to play, and they had to play without a whole lot of players, not just quarterbacks.
And lucky the Cowboys' bad luck was they get them. They got the Ravens after the great Lamar Jackson – was promoted on Saturday. He was allowed to come back and tested negative and was allowed to come off the protocol and play against America's team in a nationally televised game and embarrass the Dallas Cowboys. But you will never convince me that the Ravens were more compromised than the Denver Broncos, a team that had to go into the Wildcat for the whole first half and then put some poor kid who'd played a little college quarterback out there. They were compromised beyond belief. All right, Ed, I'm sorry to get into all that, although I kind of enjoyed that, winning that argument. The Bengals, 49ers, Eagles, Giants. Okay, I have that for the Cowboys. Win, 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 win. All right, and that gets the Cowboys to 7-9 on the season. If the Cowboys roll, it can run the table and finish 7-9, does that get them in the playoffs?
They've won one game without Dak Prescott. They are not running the table.
No, but this is a hypothetical. If they ran the table, and this is for our people, we got to give them hope so they'll keep listening to our podcast. If they run the table and finish 7-9, do they go to the playoffs, or do you think the WFT – WFT and the Giants, do you think they'll get to 7 wins?
I think one of those two teams will get to 7 wins. Yes, I do.
All right.
So I think it's a rather hopeless situation for the Cowboys, but I've been wrong before. How about that for an admission?
I like that. That's the first time I've ever heard you say that. Chris, mark that down. Let's keep that for posterity. Oh my goodness.
Would you like me to sign off with one final incredible stat that puts this evening and this performance into perspective? This is the first time that the Cowboys have allowed four games of 200 plus rushing yards in a season since the year 2000. So that's been 20 years when they allowed five such games. This is only the sixth time in franchise history the Cowboys have allowed four 200-yard rushing games in a season. The other years, 1960, they allowed six. That was their very first year of existence. The year 2000, 1984, 1979, and 1961. So two of the other five times it happened were in their first 2 years of existence as an NFL franchise. That's where they are. The Cowboys are back at the very beginning when it comes to stopping the run.
Golly, I can't believe that 84 team, because they would have had, I know the 85, they lost the Rams in the playoffs.
Because Eric Dickerson ran for 278 yards against.
I was thinking 84 team would have still had some pretty good defensive players. They may have been aging a little bit, but my goodness. I mean, the Manster still would have been out there. Some of those guys. Geez.
Well, they allowed 200 yards rushing four times, so.
All right. There you go. All right. I'm going to spend the rest of my evening looking back at that.
See, this is what happens. I admit I'm wrong once, and now the very next thing I say, you try to prove me wrong on that. Like, you think now I'm vulnerable, and that I'm going to admit another false statement.
You have been very vulnerable in this podcast, and I like this new Ed Werder. I really do. All right, to everybody who's been a part of this, it's been a good evening, not for the Cowboys, but for the Doomsday Podcast. We've marched on. Thanks to Chris Gross there at our home studios there at Frito Nation Productions. Thanks to Frito as he continues his fight to get back. Thanks to Ed Werder. For Ed, I am Matt Mosley. And thanks to Glenn Stretch Smith, I should add. Good night, everybody.
On to Cincinnati.
There are any number of reasons you might consider selling your home. To move closer to family, live within a smaller budget, or just wanting a change of scenery. Whatever your reasons, having to figure out all the various housing market trends in your area may not be what you signed up for. That's where an agent who is a Realtor comes in. Realtors have the expertise to help you find the right price and navigate the process to sell your home in a way that's right for you. That's who we are. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
Norman, we need to pause this surgery.
What, doctor?
Because Xfinity Mobile just got even better. Now you're automatically connected to Wi-Fi speeds up to a gig while you're on the go. Plus, existing Xfinity customers can buy one unlimited line and get one free for a year.
Visit XfinityMobile.com to learn more. Offer ends 6/21. Restrictions apply. Existing Xfinity internet service and two new unlimited lines required. Reduce speeds after 30 gigabytes of usage per line. Data thresholds may vary. Actual Wi-Fi speeds vary, not guaranteed.